Hello and welcome to the Culture File Weekly with me, Luke Clancy, and your weekly helping of culture files, which this time around are full of chips, from chipped teeth to fried plantain chips and a table covered in chocolate chip cookies, each of which will be indicated as we go along by this sound. It's a kind of audio treasure hunt, and yes, this will be on the exam. Later on, Orit Gat will report all the feelings you might have if you visited Uri Aran's latest show at the Douglas Hyde Gallery, and we'll hear about Irish-tinged Americana from one of its main practitioners, vocalist and songwriter Aoife O'Donovan. But first, we're off to the Balbriggan of the imagination, where the town's voices are filtered through the writing of Kevin Curran. Alongside his career as a schoolteacher in Balbriggan, Curran works as a writer observing life in Ireland's youngest and most diverse town. His 2013 novel Beatsploitation was the first Irish novel to centre African experience of living here. His latest novel Youth gathers four teenage voices of Balbriggan in a coming-of-age story that is, Curran says, checked for accuracy by the same youth. The audiobook version animates the novel's characters with the help of a cast which includes Gabriel Adewusi, who plays Angel, a would-be barber at a crossroads. Adewusi, who's also appearing in this summer's Druid O'Casey trilogy, came to Culture File Towers along with Kevin Curran to talk about representing Balbriggan.
Plumy storms into my gaff, big vexed head on him. Isaac's with him. Only he walks down the hall in Plumy's shadow, all quiet and shy. No lie, but then Isaac looks into the kitchen and says, "All right, Gloria." My mom flicks the dishcloth over her shoulder and gives a big wave back like she's hyped the lads are stalling it up here. She's not.
Youth comes from, I think, 10 years. It can only come from 10 years as a teacher in Balbriggan. I'm from Balbriggan, but I've also been teaching there for years. This book couldn't have been written 10 years ago. It could only be written now. It's just from observing kids in action over the last 10 years. You know, the book itself is just four different characters. Tanya, who's 16, Angel, who's 18, Princess, who's 17, and Dean, who's 17. And it's just four kids on the street of Balbriggan walking around unbeknownst to each other, like passing each other on the street, and then they start to, as all stories do, they start to make links and connections and they come together, and when their paths cross, things happen. But it came about from just observing kids in my hometown of Balbriggan. There's a line I like to say nowadays, that, you know, Balbriggan is currently Ireland's youngest town and most diverse town, and so I like to say it is literally Ireland's future now. And how that plays out on the streets and in the school I teach in is fascinating to me. And I think it's I genuinely think it's an exciting time. And what I see in front of me in the school I teach in and in Balbriggan and on the streets, it's an exciting time for Ireland. And it's a different time, a challenging time, but it's exciting and it's one that's full of hope. So that's where it came out of the story.
The Black Irish kind of community in Ireland, I mean, it's obviously not a situation where absolutely everyone knows each other, but you know, first, second, third degrees, do you know what I mean? I know lads from Balbriggan. I know some of the lads, actually, funny enough, that Kevin would have taught in Balbriggan. I mean, and I'm also kind of really aware of the culture or cultures that many of these guys at the time would have been pulling from in terms of the music they're making, the way they're dressing, the way they're speaking, their interests, things like that. So it is something that I'm aware of. It is something that I've tangentially been around, and it's something that I can recall and was able to really supplement with, obviously, you know, the videos, for example, the research, and like I said, just things that I myself have kind of seen and come across. For that reason, it wasn't a tough character to kind of build and step into, because in a way it felt really familiar, and Kevin's done a great job of writing that voice in a way that makes it feel familiar, that makes it feel like, okay, this makes sense, I can step into it, and I can supplement it with various other things. Everything else aside from that is just, I guess, the other job of an actor is interpreting intent, interpreting decisions, interpreting purpose, interpreting how I feel about the many relationships that I have as the character.
No lie, I glance at the room, see it for like the first time ever. There's way too many picture frames of me and my mom or my nana with me when I was a little baby, and stack little stupid china figures above the fireplace. The coffee table is even made of glass. Oh shit then, Isaac says, slapping his leg. Angel's a driller now, dropping bars.
Angel's just a Balbriggan lad. He's from Balbriggan. He knows nothing other than Balbriggan. It's just that he happens to be black and Irish. And of course, it's going to mean he comes up against different obstacles in his life and as he goes through his life. But the main thing for me was, number one, was he's just a 17-year-old on the streets of Balbriggan. And that's where I met him and that's where I start with him. And it's the same with every other character. Of course, you have to then come down to his level and where he is at in his life and Troy as a writer to see where his challenges lie and what he has to meet day to day. And that itself came out, like the character of Angel came out of just literally talking to kids in my class and just being surprised constantly by things they tell you. Little things like going into Super Value, they're being followed. I'm like, all right, okay, yeah, that would never have happened to me when I was growing up. And then small things start to build and you start to see different small stories. Now, they don't make it into the novel itself, but they start to give you a character and give you an experience in Balbriggan that I thought is different and I think needed to be told.
Angel is a dynamic character. He's the character that wants so much more than is available, and he's trapped in the kind of routine, the ruts of the social environment that he's in, and he wants so much more than that. And his entire journey throughout the book is just fighting with himself and fighting against those social kind of strictures that hold him in place.
My mom looks into the room, big smile. You boys want some baked plantain chips? Isaac gives a gas thumbs up, but I stare at him. Yeah, no thanks, ma'am, I say. No thanks, Gloria, Isaac says. Bottom lip out like he's gonna cry. Palumi, still standing in the middle of the room, just shakes his head, eyes on the rug. My mom's eyebrows nearly lift into her head wrap and she looks at me as if it's my fault and I'm gonna get it later. She closes the door behind her without saying anything.
As I can say, as someone who works in the arts who has not yet found a lot of people to kind of look to who I can say, oh, you're black and Irish and have made your way through these kind of murky waters. Yeah. It's a difficult thing to do by yourself. Now, I'm aware that there have been some, but there isn't a landscape of artists that might make it easier, or that might show you what a blueprint might look like of what it means to be black and have grown up in this culture and have to succeed.
Palumi steps closer, flicks his thumb, sniffles. There's gonna be beef. The room is gonna get smashed up. My mom's gonna come in screaming, batter me in front of the boys. I don't wanna be this. Do this. But man's gotta do what man's gotta do, so I take out my phone.
The kids say to me, like, why is it every book that we read that has a black character in it has to have slavery involved or, you know, certain words involved? And they're tired of it. And then it got me thinking, like, I'm obviously a white person. The experience doesn't affect me. You know, I don't think about it. But in class, you don't need to be hearing this every time there's a black character. They're all old books and they deal, you know, with issues that are still relevant today. But the stories are old. And I think I genuinely feel a responsibility as a writer to having access to this town and having access to this world to write it. Because in 20 years' time, someone will say, you know, Kevin, you were living in Balbriggan and you were teaching in Balbriggan in 2023. You didn't think of ever writing about that world that was coming into being and this new, exciting kind of landscape. For me to say in 20 years' time, oh no, you know, I was afraid what people would say on Twitter.
Oh my days!
You know, I think it's important that it has to be to see, you know, kids reflected in the books, and better books will come. And, you know, I have no doubt in plays, and Gabriel writes as well, you know, and better films, but it has to start somewhere. And I just have been lucky enough and privileged enough to talk for 12 years and have access to the kids for 12 years and see the stories and see that, you know, at this stage in the year, I keep on coming back to it, the year 2023, they really should have a few characters in a few books just walking the streets of their hometown.
You're writing.
I knew you'd come to me. Tentatively, right? Just shorts. I'm trying to finish a play at the moment, actually, as part of the Baptiste program. We have the first kind of readings coming up soon, but it's a development process. It is something I've always been interested in. It's something I've always wanted to do. Like Kevin says, it's crucial that some of us who feel the impulse to do so get our voices out there, because we do have unique experiences, we do have things to say, and we do have contributions to make to the wider Irish culture, because we're part of it now.
Today I gave 3 copies of the book to 3 girls who read for me the Princess chapters. They came in today to collect them, and they were delighted with it. You know, the day, because they were, the last year they read the Princess chapters for me to make sure, again, the language was right. Tomalina, Glory and Queenie. And they loved reading the books. They read the Princess chapters and they were like, this is amazing. This girl is amazing. I haven't seen this girl in Irish literature before. And like, that's a buzz. That's cool. And they will see more, obviously. But if I don't do it, you can't just expect someone else to do it. You know, when you see them around, you say, someone's got to do it now. And then people will follow on and you'll get better princess stories and more in-depth angel stories. You know,
I think you're right, yeah. Too.
You tell the version of the story that you know, that you've witnessed, that you've experienced, and I think you do it in a really respectful way, honestly. Many of these kids will grow up. Maybe some of them are already working on telling their versions of the stories, and like you said, just having heard something else out there will be valuable. Having seen something else out there, having seen that there's space for something else out there, will be invaluable to every single one of them, I'm sure.
If you know, you know.
Gabriel Adarussi there as Angel from the audiobook version of Youth, and I was also talking to the book's author, Kevin Curran. Youth is published by the Lilliput Press. Coming home to DeBarra's next with the American vocalist and songwriter Aoife O'Donovan. O'Donovan is, among other things, the vocalist on the Goat Rodeo sessions with bandmates that include Yo-Yo Ma and Chris Thiel, and she won a Grammy with her other group, I'm With Her. But solo work is where O'Donovan's at now. She moved to Florida in 2020 and there recorded her triple Grammy-nominated album, Age of Apathy, as well as a more recent pendant collection, Age of Apathy Solo Sessions, in which she rethinks those compositions for solo performance, which is what she'll be doing in Ireland this week. Ahead of which, Aoife O'Donovan spoke to Culturefile's Marissa Brown about making and remaking.
Looking out the window, it feels like I've been here before. The shady patch of green behind the big box store. Round another corner.
My name is Aoife O'Donovan, and I'm coming to you from my home in Central Florida. I'm a singer, a songwriter, a musician. I've been doing this professionally since I was 18 years old, and just so lucky to get to play music. It's my favorite thing to do. I recorded the solo sessions and Age of Apathy. I've obviously played all the songs solo many times because I do tour solo often and really love playing the music, really, no matter the context. I think that the thing for me as a songwriter and a musician in general is that I love that every single time you play a song, it's going to be different, like no matter what. Even if you're playing it with the same band, even in the same venue, 2 nights in a row, it's still going to be a different experience because there's just something that happens when you perform.
I'm just pulling out my hair, trying to remember where. In America, I swear I saw you running for the back door. Elevators, old songs, empty bottles so long. After midnight, when I was young, the ice melted on my tongue. Elevators, broken glass, nothing less. I finally figured out that everything was lost, so I climbed in my wagon and started across the wide open prairie and headed up to the lake. Where is what's good here, and what are we gonna make of America, America? I'm just pulling out my hair, trying to remember where I was in America, America. I'm just pulling out my hair in America, America. I'm just pulling out my hair, trying to remember where I was in America.
Doing the solo versions of these songs the way I did them in the studio and a lot of them I sort of had to rework, because when I made Age of Apathy, when I wrote these songs, I was tracking them because I was hearing bass and drums on them. So then when I sort of had to go back and say, well, how would I hear these songs without bass and drums? And I think Phoenix is a really good example of that, because it took me a while, but I ended up coming up with just a completely different way to play the song on the guitar, and way to sort of emote the lyrics, and way to sort of phrase it. There's just something about also like how fluid the timing can be when you're playing by yourself, and how you can really just sort of feel the, like, the time's not the villain coming up behind you. You're not sort of thinking about the propulsion of the instruments, you're really just thinking about how the phrase is going to carry you.
Time's not the villain coming up behind you. It's a marigold song, love if you will, take a little more time. I smell fire, it's coming from the flames that are dancing on my wings. I'ma put on a wire, killing time. Fever's got me shaking, it rises up like a road to meet me. Fever's got me quaking like San Andreas fall.
We're so nostalgic for the past. We want to get to the past, but also we're looking toward the future. I have a small child. Of course, I can't be too nostalgic for the past.
He had time on his hands. He carried the world on his shoulders.
I think that B61, while it is at its core, it's just a love song. You know, it's sort of about the beginnings of something. And but it does kind of dive into, when you're at the beginning of something, you inevitably can picture the end, or you can picture what it could become. And that's kind of where I was trying to go with that middle bridge. That idea, like that bridge in the middle of that song, where I really do, you know, sort of imagine myself waking up amidst the rubble of the apocalypse. And I mean, how do you know? Like, how do you know that anything is happening that you can't see? There's just something so primal about that feeling of that, like, you are the only one on earth, that you are the only one that you can be sure of.
Standing where we stood under an indigo sky.
In my song Galahad, I'm sort of trying to be a little bit cheeky and imagine myself, or, you know, the lover of a knight. The lover of somebody who's universally adored, and really what's kind of behind that.
I'll meet you out behind the oxen shed, and we set 13 bells running through my head. Somebody told me you're pure.
I'm a big fan of all the Arthurian fiction, The Mists of Avalon. One of my favorite books is The Buried Giant by Ishiguro. I'm a big reader, and I always have been, and I do think that we are all, as songwriters and creators, pulling from everything that we have around us. I just love the idea of a character and of a story, and of the sort of the idea that one person can birth an entire universe.
Baby, I sting like a scorpion. So if you hear a rustling,
you can write a character that will then become so real that you feel, as the reader, that you really know this person and that they really know you. I just think it's a fascinating tool of humankind. We can do that. We can create worlds.
I'm alive, I'm alive, I'm alive, I'm alive, I'm alive. I'm alive.
My music is heavily influenced by Irish folk music, certainly. The music of Karen Casey, of Kathy Jordan, of beautiful vocalists that I consider peers at this point, but that I also heard, you know, as a teenager, because my dad was playing their music on his public radio show in Boston. And so to try to incorporate that style, that sort of lilt, into my sort of more modern Americana tinged folk music, I guess, it feels like a privilege. So my dad is from West Cork, from Clonakilty. And so we grew up going over there every summer, really looking forward to playing in Clonakilty at De Barra's, one of my all-time favorite venues. And actually one time I was on stage at De Barra's and looked out and Paul Brady was just standing at the back bar. I remember being like, what the heck? Somewhere down the line, I let go around 2009. And then the Doolin Folk Fest. I can't wait for that as well. My aunt Carmel lives in Clare. I spend a lot of my time as a child and teenager on the West, sort of Lahinch, Doolin, swimming and camping and getting up to no good. So I still have a chip in my tooth to prove it. Radio plays my own name. It's a singer in the park.
Ephra O'Donovan there, and the reporter was Marissa Brown. Ephra O'Donovan played that gig in De Barra's during the week and is playing that gig in Doolin Folk Fest right this minute. Perfectly understand if you have to dash off. You can always catch up with the podcast when you get back. Also on the bill tonight on the main stage in Doolin are I Draw Slow and Vieux Farka Touré, so still worth a dash. And finally, this time on the Culture File Weekly, we're off to the Douglas Hyde Gallery for a show from Uri Aran, a New York-based artist whose work has been shown around the world. In Dublin, he's installed Take This Dog, for example, which happens through sculpture and sound, video and, as is common in the artist's work, baked goods. Orit Gat went to see the exhibition for Culture File, and these are her voice notes.
Uri Aran and I first met over 10 years ago. I was just starting out as an art critic, and he was preparing for a big show in New York. We were in his studio in Brooklyn, and he was making tea as we chatted in Hebrew, the native language we both share. When we sat down to start the interview, and I pressed record on the tape, we switched to English. We didn't plan this. English was simply the language in which we were accustomed to talking about art. English felt professional, the switch natural. If you've only ever worked in one language, written in it, talked about art in it, then which language are you translating from? And which one are you experiencing the work in? Mostly, when I tell people about how Aran and I first met, I entertain them by describing how I tried to eat his art. When he was making tea, I was looking at all the packets of chocolate chip cookies in the studio and asked if we could have some. These are materials, he scolded me. At the time, Aran's installations included stacks of Chips Ahoy cookies as well as glasses of milk. But when I think back to that day, I remember mostly that switching of languages, how we never discussed it, how it feels related to Aran's work too. In Aran's exhibition, which is on view now at the Douglas Hyde Gallery in Trinity College in Dublin, there is a work called Bread Library. The first time I saw photos of the Bread Library from Aran's exhibition at Gavin Brown's Enterprise, a gallery that has since closed in New York, I giggled a bit. Not because I didn't take it seriously, but because I thought it was wonderful. It really is a library made out of bread. A collection of rolls on shelves, each shaped like letters of the Latin alphabet. There's a shelf of A rolls, then a shelf of B's, and so on. What do you place on shelves if not an assortment of letters? Bread is a heavily symbolic thing. It stands in for nutrition, for a coming together, as in to break bread, for cultural specificity. In language, written and spoken and used and failed and impossible is a major subject for Aran. On the wall at the entrance to the gallery is an untitled work which Aran has been making versions of throughout his exhibitions for years, an assortment of small bronze sculptures with a patina that makes them seem aged, hung across lines on the wall. They look like writing from a pre-modern culture, like a language that could be deciphered only by non-existent experts, like an impossible message. If you asked me, what does it mean? I will scramble to find the right words. I'm not a nervous art critic, but I'd struggle to say that the tabletops with ceramic sculptures and piles of googly eyes on them, the slide projector on the floor showing a faded image of Bert from Sesame Street, or the intricate collages and drawings on wood that are quite abstract, mean one single thing. My favorite of these 2D works is just called Everything. When I looked at the list of works, all I thought was, fair enough, why can't one thing be everything? It leads me to accept that while I don't know what one single thing means, I can tell you what meaning feels like in this exhibition, and in Aran's work in general, a suggestion of multitude. Downstairs, next to the alphabet rolls, is a video called Clean. In it, a man's voice describes a dog. Good dog. Nice dog. How is this even the subject of art? But standing there, listening as language repeats itself, the words become stranger and stranger, and the viewer more enmeshed in them. The repetition makes language itself seem divorced from what it's meant to be, like the small bronze sculptures on the wall. Instead of a relationship between sign and signifier, instead of a thing and its agreed-upon definition, is this question that rises and bubbles. Nice dog? Is that it? And then there's the title of the work, Why Clean? And the connection to the title of the show. Take this dog, for example. None of these relationships between language and work feel straightforward, and that's okay. Once, at a party, I was chatting with an editor of an art magazine and describing an exhibition. It sounds boring, I know, but it's a common party topic. Oh, what have you seen recently is art small talk. I was discussing this romantic, sentimental video work I had recently seen and totally, really loved. I wouldn't have taken you for the kind of person to like this kind of thing, he said, deflating me, still trying to impress him, clutching my drink. I'm usually the one for staircase wit, for I wish I said's, for regret. But in that moment, I surprised myself, answering exactly how I felt. I'd rather be the kind of person who likes this type of work. I still feel that way. It's how I think about a lot of the art that I write about, look at. That to love it means to come with an openness and a willingness to like it, rather than to understand it. Take this, for example. It's such an easy turn of phrase. Every possible option, any specific example, takes you away from all the other ones. Still, it contains within it all the things you didn't mention. It's just one example. As I listen to the voice saying, nice dog, and I don't even like dogs, I know. What I learned from Aran's art is that multiple narratives set all these different versions of the world in motion. One last thing. There's a bakery thanked in the exhibition credits. I can talk about looking for the right words and how language can fail and how books are just an assortment of letters, but there's also the actual presence of the bread library. The bread has to be baked, presumably restocked when the letters go stale. Sometimes those practicalities of art making, of an exhibition, are incredibly telling details about the work. To thank the bakery is to recognize, too, how nothing is stable.
Aurit Gat there with her voice notes from Uri Aran's current exhibition at the Douglas Hyde Gallery, Dublin. Take This Dog, for example, runs until June 24th, and the gallery's director, Georgina Jackson, will lead a tour of the exhibition next Thursday evening, June 15th at 6 p.m. And that brings to a close this edition of the Culture File Weekly, which means you've had your chips. How many have you got? We'll be back with a family-sized packet of chips, might be chocolate, might be flaming hot, next Saturday, tea time. And of course, we'll be back with some of the little bags of miniature ones each weekday at 6:40 p.m. Till then, bye now.